The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Happy Thursday. It's Jeff Munn for Brad Sessmatt. Obviously, Brad's still recuperating from his double knee replacement. Now, if you follow Brad on social media, you know about his progress. He's doing very well. But we're here in his stead. If you don't know who I am, it's Big Club. I'm the radio voice of ASU women's basketball, pre- and post-game host for ASU football and radio, stadium voice of Phoenix Rising FC. Big match tomorrow night with Sacramento Republic at 7:30 at Casino Arizona Field. It's dollar beer night. And what else do I do? Well, I do this show. And this morning, I joined my friends from a radio station here in town for their fundraiser or their telethon. It's not on television. Giveathon for Phoenix Children's Hospital. And it actually has a sports tie-in, and we'll get to that in a minute. We're here. My good pal Eric Sorensen is with us as well. Let me see if I can, through telepathy, bring the e-cam in. I did it split screen.
We're going big today.
I have a headache.
We're going big.
Yes.
And in honor of you always wearing your alma mater polo shirt, I decided today I was going to wear my alma mater
but
polo
I didn't.
Shirt. I know.
It
I
says the Hard one. Rock Cancun.
I just tease.
Actually, the Hard Rock Cancun is my alma mater. Anyway.
You completely lost your train of thought.
Yeah. Should I explain why I'm wearing a Hard Rock Cancun
no,
golf
you should
shirt?
Not.
It's a great golf course. Great golf course. Anyway, how are you, sir?
Doing great.
Good. We got a lot to discuss. A lot of football, obviously, as the NFL preseason weekend gets underway tonight.
Ooh.
1 week from tonight, ASU football starts.
Yay, I'm more excited about that.
2 days from now, U of A starts.
Yes. So, and what some are calling a bit of a trap game in week one for the Cats?
I don't know. You know what? Hawaii's a pretty good football
team.
I don't know necessarily if you would call that a trap in the sense that Arizona would be looking ahead. Not a trap in that sense. It's a tough opener, and there's a lot of coaches that don't like to open that way.
And some Arizona schools haven't fared well against the Mountain West recently. I mean, I'm not naming names, but Arizona State. So hopefully the Cats will... We'll flip the script and take care of business over there.
It's interesting you bring that up, and I kind of keep close tabs on the Mountain West for reasons that we don't have time to get into on the show. But you look at the programs in that league; they have some really good football teams and some really good football coaches.
No doubt.
Jeff Tedford at Fresno State. I don't know how much longer Tedford's going to be there before somebody makes him a really nice offer. Jay Norvell, who was an assistant to Todd Grahams at Nevada, Rocky Long at San Diego State, and on and on and on.
Coach Fisher at Air Force.
Yes, and I'm trying to think. Wyoming's been very competitive. Tony Sanchez at UNLV is that UNLV program, and ASU will play there next year. By the way, they're going to be the second team that goes in and plays in the new Raider Stadium against UNLV. UNLV will utilize that as their home field. And so I suspect that that's going to be a network TV game. Some network's going to grab that between a Pac-12 team and the new stadium. They got to go in there,
sure.
Right? And you know what? That's one of our lead stories today. So why don't we get into one of what's going on in the world of sports? We'll get to that little tie-in in a second. But our check of the sports world is brought to you by Sagicor. Now, if you are like me, first of all, you got to lose weight. but you also have to worry about your family. Now, my kids are adults now. I have a 23-year-old son, a 20-year-old daughter, but I still worry about them. And I still want them to be taken care of, you know, when the time comes that I'm, you know. So for those of you who are younger, you really should consider Sagicor now because, as I say so often, what you are getting from Sagicor now is peace of mind. You can't put a price tag on that, but the Sagicor people are great at explaining to you in plain English how it all works, and they make it fit your budget. So we encourage you to go to SagicorNow.com, and we thank them for their support of this program. The card signed wide receiver Michael Crabtree, that occurred, if I understand my timeline correctly, last night. And we would assume, Eric, have they said whether or not he's going to be in Minnesota and play? I can't imagine that he would.
It's a good question. I do not know. I know they released Kevin White, so they
dumped one veteran
wide receiver and added another. And it makes sense. I mean, Cliff Kingsbury, Texas Tech. I know those two didn't overlap per se.
No,
but there's some familiarity there.
Yeah,
sure.
and Michael Crabtree's
good wide receiver.
They were running obviously under Mike Leach. They were running the air raid.
Sure.
At Texas Tech, so it's an offense that even though he didn't play for Cliff Kingsbury, he's very familiar with. So I would suspect that that's not going to be that hard a transition for him. But not knowing how much activity he's had in the preseason and training camps or just workouts on his own, I can't imagine that they'll have him available for Saturday's game at Minnesota. I mentioned I was at the PCH Giveathon for Phoenix Children's Hospital, and you know, we have great many friends at Bonneville International, which owns KTAR and 98.7 FM, and I'm involved with them as one of their fill-in hosts, so I was down there today. Ran into Michael Bidwell. The Cardinals made a very generous donation to Phoenix Children's Hospital, and Michael and I go back a long way, back to when the Cardinals first arrived in the Valley, and so it's always good to see him. And one of the things he said to me, we immediately started talking football, and he mentioned to me that he's very surprised at the rush to judgment on Cliff Kingsbury and whether or not his offense will work. And he also said, he was very exact with me on this, he said, we've ran six different plays in the preseason game against the Raiders. Variations of it, but six basic different plays. So they haven't come close to rolling out what they're going to roll out during the season. And it's for that reason, and I said this Monday, you've got to withhold judgment. You can't come to any conclusions. You might not be able to come to a conclusion for a couple of years. It's something different, and it's going to take a little time for it to take hold. So, yeah, everybody's got an opinion, but I think we're a million miles away from coming to any hard conclusions about whether or not this is going to work. The D-backs lose to Colorado 7-2 yesterday at Chase Field. They are in Milwaukee, day off today. They'll open a series with the Brewers tomorrow. Three in Milwaukee, two in San Francisco. These are two teams that the D-backs are involved with in the National League wildcard race. The D-backs are 4.5 games out of the second wild card at 64-64. I meant to get to this on Monday's show, but hopefully I'll have some time a little bit later on today to talk about something a friend of mine said to me about why shouldn't the D-backs continue to press as hard as they can to get a wild card spot. And I'm not suggesting that they should tank, but I'll explain why I don't necessarily think the public should be that disappointed if the D-backs end up out in the cold. College football does indeed, as we mentioned, get cranked up for real here on Saturday. Two big games. Miami will play Florida in Orlando. I'm sure there are other games, but the ones of greatest interest for those of us who will be camped in front of the TV will include Arizona and Hawaii Saturday night, 7:30 Arizona time kickoff. And by the way, it's on CBS Sports Network. I don't want to hear anybody complain, me, I can't find CBS Sports Network, me. You know what? First of all, invest 5 minutes in your cable guide, okay? That's one. Number two, it's on basic, it's on a sports tier with Cox. And what's that, $5 a month? So, me. Yeah, you can find CBS Sports Network, me. So, yeah, I don't want to hear any complaints about, me, I can't find the game. Well, me yourself. That's Saturday night. A week from tonight, ASU opens year two of the Herm Edwards era against Kent State at Sun Devil Stadium. And, all right, I'm going to do this very quickly. Greg Moore of the Republic wrote a column over last weekend about here's how Herm Edwards can end up on the hot seat. I was like, what? And then he did one of his little video 60-second features the other day where he talked about the possibility that if ASU struggles out of the gate, they will pull Jaden Daniels and go to Dylan Sterling Cole.
Really?
I love DSC. But if you're going to invest in a freshman quarterback at the one and at the two spot in your quarterback depth chart, you're not pushing the panic button. And I don't see there's going to be a need to do that anyway. I'm like, really? They're going to skip Joey Yellen and go to the number three guy if this team struggles. And look, I, you know, Herm has always said best players play. I have, as I said, I just think the world of Dylan Sterling Cole, and I wish the best for him. There's been no indication from DSC what he intends to do with his football future. But bottom line is, if they're going with Jaden Daniels at the start, they're going to hang in there with him. Nobody's job's on the line, which is another thing. While you're writing a column about here's how Herm Edwards could end up on the hot seat, he's not going to be on a hot seat, okay? This is a long-term project. If he goes, if they were to go 4-8, he's not on the hot seat, okay? He's not on the hot seat. And that's not just because the athletic director, the guy that hired him, is still there as the AD. It's just, this is, everybody knows this is going to take time. All right. I do want to get in a comment about the Pac-12 saying no 9 a.m. kickoffs. And a couple other things that have crossed my mind football-wise. We'll get to all that after a break. We have a few little surprises in store. Bill Gutekunst will be on today's show with a number of things to talk about. So, boy, we better catch our breath and take a break. We're back with more right after this on sports360.com. Back on the Brad Sesmatt Show. By the way, the name of this website is sports360az.com. I knew that. I'm Jeff Munn. Eric Sorensen is with us. There are a couple other things I wanted to get to top of mind. I was mentioning in a moment ago this column by Greg Moore of the Republic about here's how Herm Edwards can end up on the hot seat. And again, I say, really? USA Today did come out today with a list of coaches that are on the hot seat. And numero uno is Clay Helton at USC. This is not a surprise. They had a miserable year last year by USC standards. Attendance plummeted. The community is not real happy. And, oh, by the way, up the 405 freeway in Los Angeles, there's Chip Kelly at UCLA. So there is no question. And unfortunately for Clay Helton, they've got a monstrous schedule. But I'll tell you what, if they make a coaching change, and all signs indicate that if they are like 7-5, they will, the rubber's going to meet the road on Lynn Swann as the USC athletic director. He's going to make a move of desperation, and that move is entitled Hire Urban Meyer. And that's why this ties into this story that last night the Pac-12 announced we are not, for the time being, going to do 9 a.m. kickoffs. Which I applaud for this reason, and I said this on Monday's show. If the intent of these 9 o'clock kickoffs, 9 a.m., is to get more people to watch, that will not happen. Because the only network that has shown interest in a 9 o'clock a.m. Pac-12 football game is Fox, whose lead into that game would be a one-hour pregame show that will be... I'm trying to be kind here. It's just not going to do that well in the ratings. You've got Rob Stone, Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, all good guys. Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer's going to be gone by the middle of the season. He's a career coach. He can tell you all he wants that, oh, I'm done coaching. If USC writes him a big enough check, he's back in coaching. And Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart have said, we're going to be in his ear about USC if they have an opening. So, first of all, that show's going to be in turmoil because one of their prime hires is probably bailing 3/4 of the way through the season. And it's not going to be that successful a show because it's on for 1 hour while ESPN's College Game Day is on for 3. I've said this, and I'll continue to say it. Even if I'm wrong about the ratings for the Fox college football pregame show, if Fox is the only network that's interested in doing this, I want no part of it. Because it won't do well. People will not turn off ESPN to watch anything on Fox unless it's Ohio State, Michigan. If ESPN were the one to say we want to do a 9 a.m. Pac-12 game, great, I'm in. Because College Game Day with Lee Corso and the headgear and the celebrity picks is your lead-in. You've got an audience waiting for you. But if it's Fox, I'm sorry, no. And all due respect to the people at Fox, they're very inventive, they're creative, they work very hard. I want nothing to do with that network for a 9 a.m. Pac-12 football game. What else did we have going on? I wanted to talk a little bit, and I'm changing gears, and I'm sorry to keep jumping around the board here, about the D-backs. A friend of mine, and Eric, if you want to jump in on this, feel free. Friend of mine who spent many years, he's from Chicago. Well, he's my best friend, my kid's godfather. He reignited his interest in baseball when the Cubs became contenders in 2015. But he still carries, he's a huge football fan, and he still takes a lot of football thinking into watching baseball. And we were discussing the D-backs the other day, and I said to him, I don't know whether or not it's really prudent for them to put all their eggs in a basket marked get the wild card. And he said, why shouldn't they do that? And my reasoning on this, and this is where if you don't agree with me, Eric, you're welcome to jump in. I know that people are saying that the farm system has improved, and with the multiple amount of picks that they had out of June and the players they got in the deadline deals, yes, it has improved. But that doesn't mean that that farm system's ready to produce top-flight major league talent. They need more help in that farm system, and it's easier to get that help if you're drafting 13, 14 in the first round as opposed to 18, 19, 20. My point is this. I'm not saying they should tank. What I'm saying is the public needs to understand that, you know, Mike Hazen made these deals at the deadline. Yeah, they're technically still in the race, but if they really felt like it was all or nothing in terms of going for a wild card berth, I honestly believe they would not have traded Zach Greinke. So, and that's why I was so impressed with the deals, because the owner, Ken Kendrick, has always been about he's win now. And so I give Hazen a lot of praise. I'm just saying that people just need to be realistic about this. They need to understand that finishing out of the playoff picture this year is not a terrible thing for this franchise.
I don't look at them as a playoff team.
I don't either.
However, the standings indicate that they are in it.
They're 4.5 out.
They're in it. They need the problem is they have to jump 1, 2, 3. There's like four teams in front of them. So, okay. And it's always better at this time of year. You would know more about this because you're more of a baseball guy. But this time of year, it's always better to be the chased than the chaser because of the shrunken schedule as we get into September. Correct?
I'll give you a good example. The Mets, who are entering a really difficult stretch of their schedule.
And have been pretty much white hot since the All-Star break.
And so. they've already won two from the Indians and are going for a sweep tonight. And then they have the Braves. You look at that roster. Peter Alonso has 40 home runs. They have Noah Syndergaard. You have Jacob deGrom. You have Marcus Stroman.
Yep.
Where are the D-backs? Where's their Peter Alonso? Where's their Marcus Stroman? Where is their Jeff McNeil? And again, this sounds like I'm being critical. I'm not. I'm just saying, be realistic about this. Okay. Yeah, they're 4.5 out, but I still think it's not a disaster if they don't get the second wild card.
Not at all.
And especially
if you would have told me before the season started, money, that the Diamondbacks would be in the wild card race at the end of August, I'm sure a lot of people would have been like, yeah, we'll take that.
Yeah, and I'm sure the Diamondbacks would have taken it. They are, paraphrase Bill Parcells, they are what their record says they are, which is a .500 baseball team.
Exactly.
The thing of it is
64 and 64.
Right. With, let me do quick math in my head. I'm channeling my inner Mike Francesa inside joke. 34 games left to go in the season.
And they're playing the Brewers, who are conveniently a game and a half ahead of them in the wild cards.
And they have a road trip coming where they go to New York. Now, they have opportunities, not many of them, to play the teams that are ahead of them in the wild card standings, Brewers and Mets in particular. But I just don't – the other thing about – and I've mentioned this before. If they get the second wild card, the chances are very good they're going to go to Washington. And the Nationals, you're going to roll out either Max Scherzer or Steven Strasburg. Well, have fun with that. And even if you do win that game, guess what you get after that? A best of five with the Los Angeles Dodgers, who have not forgotten Archie Bradley.
Right.
And if you think that the Dodgers are going to look past the D-backs in a five-game series, you are on drugs. they will be out for blood. They'll carve the snakes up. And again, I'm not ripping the club. It's just reality, gang. The Dodgers are eons ahead of everybody in the division. And they would, if you think that the sweep they had on the D-backs in 2017 was bad, my point is just this. Look, there's something admirable about getting a playoff berth, and the D-backs should continue to push. But I also think there comes a point, and it may not be necessarily tied to the standings. You might have to do it sooner than that, where Mike Hazen and Torey Lovullo have got to start looking at younger players just to see what they've got. Kevin Cron has had a monster year at AAA and hasn't even been there the whole year. So they've got to do that. They've got to look ahead. And you can't do it running Christian Walker out there every day. Christian Walker, who's had a great season and it's a great story, he's not a guy you build your franchise around long term. He's either 30 or he's really close to it. And it's a great story, but they've got a kid down in the minor leagues who can play first and can really swing the bat. They need to look at him. They've got other people in the minor leagues that they need to look at and get a judgment on. They may not be ready for the major leagues, but you might be inclined to get them up here for a couple of games just to see. And that's really it's one of the dilemmas that Mike Hazen is in, and his staff are in regards to what they do with this organization going forward. I give them great marks. How they ever convinced ownership and management to bite the bullet on trading Greinke and basically say we're probably not going to make it is admirable, because there's been a very much a win-now mentality in the D-backs organization starting at the top for a long time. And I give Mike Hazen a lot of credit. I think he's finally got it across to Ken Kendrick that you can't do it short term. You have to do it long term, and especially if you are a team that does not have a really large payroll.
I'm not comparing these two organizations, because this is certainly apples to oranges, but yeah. You see what Jerry Jones has been saying recently about Ezekiel Elliott and the fact that we're not going to break the bank for you because we want to have a balanced, established, long-term viable roster moving
right
forward. In a way, the Diamondbacks, to a much different, much lesser degree, sort of did that with Zach Greinke.
Right.
Like, they went for it, they signed him, and then, okay, this thing is just not working, and they moved on. I'm not saying that something's going to happen with this Ezekiel Elliott situation, I think, before the season starts.
Sure.
But I'm just saying, even the biggest and most powerful teams in professional sports, some of them still have to kind of watch the numbers when it comes to not overpaying even for their best players.
Well, a great example, and I know we're up against a break, my friend from Chicago has fallen back in love with the Cubs, and I've reminded him he loves Addison Russell. He thinks Addison Russell, and I know Russell's had a rough year, he's had some off-the-field things, but he still loves his game. And I told him in 2014, if Theo Epstein had taken the win-now attitude, he would have never traded Jeff Samardzija to Oakland for Addison Russell. Addison Russell would be either with the A's or somewhere else. And as it turned out, Addison Russell was a big part of their World Series win in 2016. Sometimes you have to do that. You have to make trades looking down the road. And it can't be about, we got to go for it every year. And again, that doesn't mean tanking. It means just thinking long term. There's a huge difference. We'll continue with more on the Brad Sesmat Show. You get the feeling that I'm just kind of, I've got a lot of pent-up hostility that I'm just trying to let loose? Maybe I am. I'll think about that, and we'll get back with more after a break on Sports360AZ.com. Back on the Brad Sesmat Show, a Thursday program, Jeff Munn for Brad. Remember, Sports360AZ.com. You get the latest on everything local. High school football starts tomorrow night, right? Am I wrong?
Technically, it starts tonight. There is a game
tonight.
Tucson. Yeah, Canyon Del Oro plays tonight. Down
is
Tucson.
That a TV it's, game?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay,
there's only one game, but for real, it starts tomorrow.
You know what? I promise I can do this in 30 seconds. There's some of the things I want to get to. My father was a high school administrator, and he always told me that if Cox Communications had walked into his, if he wanted to be an AD, never got the chance. He had a chance to be the AD at Carl Hayden, and it was my mom that said, no, because she knew how many hours he was going to put in. But he said if he had been an athletic director at a school in the Phoenix Union High School District and Cox Cable or a cable company came in, said, here's a check for how many ever dollars we want to play a game on Thursday night, he would have torn it up and thrown it at him. Because he said everything at a high school, everything at a school is there for the students. And he said that includes the football games. He said, if I play it on Thursday, we can't have a dance. We can't have a pep rally. We just play the game. And I don't think this is the case anymore, but when Cox first started doing Thursday night games, did they get rid of them? Eric tells me they don't do Thursday night games anymore. Shows how closely I pay attention. But my father said I would never do it because the games are a social activity for the student body, and you can't do the activities on a Thursday night. And I'm thrilled that they've gone off the Thursday night thing, because that is kind of a line that you cross and you just don't go there. Since I was here last, some great news in my industry. Al McCoy has made it clear that he's going to come back for a 48th season as the voice of your Phoenix Suns. I'm having flashbacks. This is great for a number of reasons. Number one, Al is very, very important to that franchise. They're not in a good place on the floor right now, and they need something that the fans can hold on to, and Al McCoy is it. And good times, bad times, over 48 years, Al's been the constant. He's been the best ambassador this franchise has ever had, and if I was Jason Rowley and Robert Sarver, I'd do anything in my power to keep him around, and they're going to get to keep him around for another year. The other thing, Vin Scully had a line one time, actors act, singers sing, broadcasters broadcast. I get asked occasionally, I'm not in an age where I'm going to retire sometime soon, but people ask me, what would you do if you retired? I'm not going to retire. I'm a broadcaster. I'm going to keep working as long as people call me and ask me to do things. I do the ASU women's games on radio. I plan to do them what was Gene Hackman's line in Hoosiers? It'd take the National Guard to get me out of here. Look, it's a great vocation. It's a fun way to make a living. And Al said it in the AZ Central story the other day. So kudos to Al. And I hope he goes as long as he wants. Let's not put numbers on it. Al goes as long as he wants to go. That's it. Next subject.
You're also the voice of the Arizona Hot Shots.
Eric mentioning that I was the former voice of the Arizona Hot Shots.
Did you see those XFL logos, Mon?
I did, and I got to tell you...
What's going on?
Well, a lot of people have the most opinion about the New York Gladiators.
LA's team doesn't even have a logo. It's like...
Well, they're the Wildcats. I really can't. I just don't want to even...
LA Wildcats?
I don't get it.
The Wildcats?
I think somebody said to me that is an oil-related nickname. You know, there's Wildcatters in Oklahoma, and they're kind of independent oil discoverers, for lack of a better term. And it wasn't the Wildcat, the animal.
Well, no one's going to know. No one's going to know that. No offense to whoever told you that.
How did I know that?
Like, the Dallas Desperados have a cool logo.
There was an arena
team. It looks like the Arizona Outlaws old logo back in the USFL days.
There was an arena football team called the Dallas Desperados. Were you around the Rattlers at that time?
I was. Almost like the same color scheme, too, I think, like a blue and white.
Yeah. That's right, and it was owned by Jerry Jones.
Yep.
Here's the thing, and I wish no ill on the XFL, but Vince McMahon is putting up all his own money, and if there's anything he should have learned, and he probably already knew this from watching the Alliance, is you got to have very deep pockets up front to make a go of it. But I think the thing that would concern me if I was an investor in this is he is deliberately trying to go anti-NFL. The Alliance, while they couldn't have an official relationship with the NFL, they embraced the NFL. They said, we're not competing with the NFL. Vince McMahon is saying we're competing with the NFL. And that would worry me because a lot of times, consistently. There's only been one entity that's ever competed with the NFL and won, and that was the American Football League. No, I know the USFL won the lawsuit, but $3, come on. The American Football League's the only one. They were, you know, the all. There were other renegade football leagues before the AFL came along, and they didn't work out too well either. So you wish them well. When the cutdowns come out of the end of preseason in the NFL, those rosters are going to start filling up pretty quickly, and we'll see. I wish them well, but I think it's better to be in a situation where you have some sort of handshake agreement or some kind of – you have better relations with the NFL. My sense is Vince McMahon is not on the happiest of terms with the National Football League. And that, to me, just kind of feels like I don't like your chances on this. But we'll see. And as somebody who worked for Spring Football League, I do wish him well. And by the way – the Hotshots won the Alliance Championship, not Orlando. We beat them. So, Steve Spurrier, enjoy your ring, but you didn't win a championship. Bill Gutekunst is up next. he's in Dallas. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of things, including a local dog who is making it big. It's not Stevie. It's not my dog, Stevie. He just had surgery the other day. He really can't handle anything right now. But we'll talk with Goody next on the Brad Sesmet Show. It's Thursday, and that music can only mean one thing. Okay, it means two things. But the one we're going with is AZ Central Gannett Chief Film and Media Critic Bill Gutekunst, who joins us from Dallas, Texas. Would you care to tell us what you are doing in Dallas?
I am dropping my second kid off at the University of Dallas, who my oldest kid also goes to school here, but for maximum parental inconvenience, they report to school 10 days apart.
Oh, wow.
I'm here for the second
time. Wow.
My oldest daughter is student teaching, and she had to come early.
Oh, okay.
When the school started. So.
Oh.
If Thursday, what does the other thing Thursday mean?
Thursday means, I don't know. I just thought, I'm glad you paid attention. Sometimes I kind of throw those curveballs in there. Actually, Thursday in the preseason means a lot of NFL football. And I mentioned it earlier in the show. I saw Michael Bidwell today at a charity event. And I asked him, why are these teams playing on Thursday nights? And he just said, because they like Thursdays. Oh, okay, good enough for me. I want to get to the movie review, but I'm going to start with something that I mentioned Monday. And I'm going to admit, Bill, I was told that you wrote a piece on this, and I haven't seen it, and I'm going to go look at it when I get home, about a gentleman who a lot of people may not be familiar with in the sportscasting world, but he was a brilliant talent. He was also the host of a game show called The Face is Familiar, and I'm speaking of Jack Whitaker, who passed away on Sunday.
Yes, and he is... I think he is one of the sort of the last of his kind. I think that, and this is a lot of what I read about. In part, I wrote about how important he was. And he had some hand in the first 21 Super Bowls in terms of broadcast. That's not
right.
So bad. He called the Triple Crown when Secretariat won in '73. But he's also, his voice just sort of sounds like sports, and I don't know that. You get that as much anymore. I mean, you could say that Jim Nance does, I guess. You could say Joe Buck does. But, Joe Buck, everybody hates him. these were guys that, I mean, I think a lot of things go into it. We didn't have as much choice. If you were going to watch, if you're going to watch the Triple Crown, you were going to watch that. I mean, there weren't going to be a lot of other outlets that are covering it and that kind of thing. But also, just the way that media is now, it's so split up, it's so fragmented that you just, there's no longer that sort of one voice that you go to. But I also think that guys like Jack Whitaker, he did everything, and he did every sport, and people specialize more now. Some don't.
Yeah.
I think we've talked before, but I think Dave Pasch is as good as anybody, and he'll do basketball and he'll do football. But
agreed.
But he's not the one who, you're not necessarily always going to hear him. And Jack Whitaker was just, if you heard his voice, it sounded like a big event.
Well, I think back, and it's very easily accessible on YouTube, the quote-unquote essays that he did, they were basically commentaries during the pregames of Super Bowls on the NFL Today. He was a terrific writer, and I would equate him in a lot of ways with Jim McKay at ABC, that they could grasp the significance of the moment and convey it in a way that would grab your attention. And I think that, too, is something that's been lost. That ties in. You mentioned Pash. I'm going to put that to the side for a moment because you wanted to talk a little bit about a movie called Ready or Not. And this is another one. I haven't seen the trailer for it, so you're going to explain this to me as we go along here.
You should see the trailer for it. You'll get a lot from the trailer. It's about this woman, Samara Weaving, who is the niece of Hugo Weaving, who is in the Matrix movies and all this. And she's fantastic in this. She is a young woman who marries into this super-duper rich family. The family owns four professional football franchises, or not football, but four professional sports franchises. I mean, that's sort of the level of wealth they are. And they made their living off of board games. And so she gets married, and she learns that you have to play a game at midnight, that was the night that you enter this family, and it does not go as expected. It's not quite the fun and games that she thought she was down for. It's nuts. It's ridiculous, but it's really fun. And she's fantastic.
Who is the lead in this?
Samara Weaving.
Okay. I didn't catch that the first time you said it, and shows you how often I get to movies. I'm hearing that name and thinking, who?
But that's definitely who for now, but you'll know her soon, I think.
Okay. Well, you've talked me into seeing this. As you're describing this to me, I'm thinking, yeah, it's so absurd, it makes it attractive a lot of respects.
Yeah. It's funny. It's brutal. There's a lot of violence, but it's pretty cartoonish. It's just sort of a good time at the movies. Nothing more, nothing less.
Well, that's what going to the movies is a lot of times. By the way, last night, I just got to duck this in, on AMC, they showed Ace Ventura. I had not seen that before. That might be, that's up there with Austin Powers as the dumbest movie I've ever seen. Now, you know what's the most absurd part of it? That Courtney Cox would get in a lip lock with Ace Ventura at the end of the movie. That's not real. That's not real.
It's funny that you bring up Austin Powers. I had a friend who once said, he said, it's the dumbest movie I've ever seen, and I'm telling everybody to see it.
I did the same thing. I was homesick one day, and I bought one of those all-day movie passes on cable, and I watched it, and at the end I thought, that's the dumbest thing I've ever seen, and when's it coming on again? In another 20 minutes, I got to see it again. All right, I'm jumping. I'm going to save Monday Night Football for the end. We had a great story here in the Valley that a local dog from a shelter is going to be the new Tramp. Of course, when you say Tramp, I think of My Three Sons, but this the Tramp is Lady and the Tramp from Disney.
Yes, I think you're the only one who thinks of
Tramp. Yeah, probably.
They found him in a shelter. He was in a shelter in New Mexico, and there's some sort of exchange program or something. He ended up in Arizona, and the Disney folks were looking for a new Tramp. As you know, Disney is remaking all their animated films as live action, or I guess you would call it live action. I mean, if you do something like The Lion King, they're real animals, but there's a lot of, you know, computer trickery involved too. And they got him, and he's the star, and they just sort of plucked him right out of there, and now he's I'm going to guess leading a little bit happier life than he was when he was on the streets of New Mexico.
I would think. Among other things, there's that famous scene of Lady and the Tramp eating spaghetti. If you get free pasta out of the deal, you're going really good.
You're right. That's what everybody thinks of when they think of Lady and the Tramp.
Yeah.
Did a great parody of it.
The reason I mentioned. I was watching, I guess it was Monday night or Sunday night, Turner Classic Movies did a Humphrey Bogart marathon, and they showed the Caine Mutiny. Fred McMurray's in that, and he's kind of the heavy in the Caine Mutiny, or he's one of the kind of villainous characters. And then 12 years later, he's sitting in the pew of a church going, "Tramp, Tramp, come here, boy," when Tramp walks into Robbie Douglas's wedding. So anyway, I'm sorry, I went off on a tangent there. Listen... Thursday night, you wrote a review on the telecast of the Raiders and Cardinals, and I'll give you my take first. I thought streamlining the booth to get Booger McFarland in the booth, get it to a two-man booth, made it an easier broadcast to listen to. But I'm still in that camp that says Joe Tessitore doesn't know the meaning of tone it down. And well, everything is over the top with Joe. And you said Dave Pasch, and I know you and I have talked about this. Dave would have to give up his Cardinal commitment, and I'm being selfish. I don't want him to do that. But if I was running things at ESPN, the guy that should be the play-by-play guy on Monday Night Football is living out here, and his name's Dave Pasch.
Well, and I think, unfortunately, I think they had a pretty good run before when they had Sean McDonough, but but John Gruden didn't like him. Look where that got him.
Right.
I think that Pasch and McDonough, and they remind me a little bit of each other. The way that they call games, they're pretty straightforward, but they're also really smart and that sort of thing. But Tessitore, we were saying before, if you heard Jack Whitaker, it sounded like a sports event. When you hear Tessitore, it sounds like what do you call it? The Derby, where you're gonna the smash 'em up Derby or whatever.
He's done a lot of boxing, and he sounds like he's doing a boxing match.
Yes, and you're definitely that. It has that rhythm, like where it's slow, and then it's like boom, boom, boom.
Right.
He does it that way. I think that's why I like a guy like Pasch or McDonough, who I think are the two best play-by-play guys going. They take it as it comes. They call the game.
Let the game come to you.
Let the game come to them.
Yeah,
and of course, as you know, far better than I do, when you go to production meetings and stuff before a game, there's always some sort of storyline that you're going to be following, and there's always a way that you're going to approach it. But if you're good at it, you let the game dictate that, and you don't try to dictate the game. And I think I like William McFarland. I think he's good. I think he's sort of feeling his way a little bit right now. I tried to talk to him beforehand that we were going to set something up, but I guess he was pretty adamant about not talking to the media beforehand. He said he really wanted to focus on what he was doing. And I don't blame him. I mean, let him.
No.
Because there was so much scrutiny last year with Witten. I mean, he's probably feeling it.
Well, and I said last year, ESPN put Witten in a terrible position. He had never done TV before. They were hoping to catch Tony Romo-type lightning in a bottle. And I will again say, I don't think Romo's that great either. He's good, but he's not the greatest of all time, as some people are anointing him. But they were trying to capture the next Romo, and it put Witten in a horrible position because he just exposed Bear on national television every week. And it was just a terrible position to put him in. But I bring this up because, and I know I'm going over old ground, but last Friday night in Anaheim, the White Sox, Steve Stone took the weekend off, and the White Sox put Bill Walton in with a friend of mine, Jason Benetti. And it got rave reviews, and I thought to myself, if ESPN really wanted to try to recapture 1970s Monday Night Football, Pasch, Walton, Rex Ryan, game, set, and match. I don't know how the NFL would feel about Walton in the booth, but, I mean, you agree with me. People from all corners would come gravitating to the TV to hear what Walton was going to say.
I think they would for a while. I think that I like Walton. I do. He gets away from the game too much when he does Pac-12 stuff. He's turned it a little bit into a parody of what he was doing at the first, I think. But yeah. I still like it, and I think he's got some interesting stuff to say. I don't know that a steady diet of it would go over so well. But I would. I think that'd be great. I'll tell you this. I think when Mike Tirico can call anything, he's very good.
Oh, I love Mike Tirico, yeah.
But I think he's dull sometimes. And I think that he took Monday Night Football so seriously that he took a lot of the fun out of it. And he was there with Kornheiser and Ron Jaworski. And, of course, I'll always be in the tank for Tony Kornheiser because I love to see a newspaper guy. In there.
I love Kornheiser, too. I don't think that's much of a secret.
But I just felt like that was... I think the thing that you're talking about brings back some of the fun. I think that's what's missing a little bit.
Yeah.
I think that, and I'll say this, I like Al Michaels. I think he's good. I Collinsworth, I used to like more, but I still like him. Those guys are good at what they do. They clearly do a lot of, prep work. They clearly take the game seriously, but they also have fun.
Right.
They're not afraid to have fun. And I feel like that's a big ingredient that's missing right now to Monday Night Football. Maybe it'll come. I think Booger has got the, you know, he sort of got the chops for that, but we'll see if they let him go.
You need a guy. I think you need a third guy in there that can play off Booger and be kind of an antagonist almost, and get into some discussions. And Witten might have turned out to be that guy. It just wasn't fair to put him in that position initially. The other thing, and I'll just get a thought from you on this very quickly, I've heard a lot of chatter in podcasts about sports media that we're about a year out from the NFL TV rights being renewed, and it sounds like ABC wants back in, and they don't just want back in for a primetime package. They want a part of Sunday afternoon. The point I'm making you can react to is the NFL is already swimming in cash. They're about to hit an ocean of money here, I think, in the next TV deal.
The next TV deal, and the big money for the next TV deal is probably going to come from a streaming service as
yes.
well. Yes. Or Twitter. You know, Twitter will sometimes stream games. They have rights to certain games and all that. And, you know, I tell you what, if you like your kid's football practice or something like that, waiting to pick him up, that's not a bad option.
No,
and I think that's where the real future is going to be. But yeah, I mean, why wouldn't you? Everybody wants in on it now, and they, as they should. I mean, you look at what happened to CBS when they lost football for however many years they lost it. Their primetime shows on Sunday night tanked.
Right.
It's the tide that floats all boats. I mean, they having NFL football, it's not just Sunday night football, by the way. It's also just like a priceless place to put your advertising for all your shows during the week.
Live like, stuff.
This show is on Tuesday night. Oh man, that looks kind of good. Maybe I'll check that out.
And
you never get that many eyeballs onto a commercial any other place.
Right.
So, of course, I mean, they want it.
Yeah, and it's look what it's done for Fox over the last 25 years. Hey, Bill, I appreciate it. Oh, yeah. We'll catch up with you. Safe travels coming home. You don't have any more kids you got to take to Dallas, right? Just two?
I got two more kids, but not.
Okay.
They're not here yet.
All right. Safe travels, my friend. We'll talk to you.
See you.
All righty. Bill Gutekunst, AZ Central and Gannett Chief Film and Media Critic. And if you haven't seen the article on Jack Whitaker, I haven't. I'm going to go read it because what a tremendous talent. Hey, thank you for being here today. We appreciate it. We didn't take attendance, but we will Monday. Stay here at sports360az.com because you're going to find out everything that's going on. As Eric mentioned, there is going to be high school football tonight, smattering of games over the weekend. You want to know those scores? This is where you find them. And this is where you'll find us Monday for the Brad Sesmatch Show. Have a nice weekend.